You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Keith.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, After Buzzers. Welcome to the Chapter 8 Netflix original series, House of Cards. I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey, and joining me today is...
Hi, guys. Emma Kostnadian.
Hi, Sophia Stanley.
And John Comerford. Rounding out the panel.
Rounding out the panel. Frank Underwood, Library. Francis J. Underwood.
That's right, yes.
Francis. Library. Yeah. Let's talk about this. Episode was very...
Yeah, you got me.
What's the word?
Reflective.
Reflective, nostalgic, sentimental.
It was kind of reflective, but it was like in a bubble, away from the rest of the world. And just to jump to the end of the episode, how when him and Stamper were walking off and they started, got back to business as normal, it just was kind of a... the tone of the episode was.
Well, both storylines, too. We're out of Washington. We went back. It's kind of reflective. It's obviously Peter goes home to his district or whatever, and Frank goes back in history, so to speak.
Right.
So there was that parallel going on.
I thought it was interesting how they incorporated SanCorp back into this
Remy back into it,
So now Remy and SanCorp SanCorp is responsible for... Yeah.
They paid for the funds
that traveled, and then Remy asked Frank asked for a favor that was asked of him, and he asked for a favor, and next thing you know, there's a Francis J. Underwood Library at his alma mater.
Yeah,
I liked how they set up the backstory for him and showed. You know, I like how they didn't do flashbacks, but they have him joined by old classmates, and there were kind of like a couple of revelations. It seemed through this reminiscent process of him being honored for his accomplishments or whatever or whatnot. And you guys want to expound on?
Because
we're going to get to it, because everybody wants to talk about this juicy bit.
We're going to get to it.
Well, hey, who doesn't experiment in college?
But ironically, that's actually how his friend kind of tried to minimize it to a certain extent. Yeah. But I actually want to back up real quick. What I found really enjoyable was we saw a completely different side to Frank.
Right.
Think about it. You know, in earlier episodes, Frank specifically made the analogy between a McMansion in Sarasota or a library, right? So arguably, we would have thought that the tone of this episode would have been a lot more pomp and circumstance from Frank.
Right.
And it wasn't. It was a lot more reflective, and he was a lot more... in his own head, kind of thinking about his legacy, the whether or not he had any kind of an impression or made any kind of like an actual real legacy. Like, if this is it, right? If the only thing I have is this library that potentially could not be here in 50 years, I don't have kids.
Right.
All I have is Claire. The only other legacy is your relationship to other people.
Right.
And we know that his relationship regarding politics, even President Higgins said, he's an asshole. Everyone knows he's an asshole.
Right.
So I think that's why the relationship with the rifleman and one in particular was so important, because that's all theoretically we all have is relationships, whether or not it's marital, children, or just interactions with other
and
people.
In the previous episode, he was talking about you are what you reveal yourself to be.
Right.
And so, you know, and he was talking, I liked it, the whole thing about this library having no permanence, and it'll be something else in 50 years, and the fact that they went to the old library, so you can clearly see, you know what, in 50 years this is what my library is going to be.
Right.
It's going to be some piece of crap that's just got trash everywhere, and some drunks are going to come in and thrash it some more.
That was really funny,
and it was interesting that the only thing that had value for him in all of this was that that moment, Terry, because he was talking about that at the end there, the ceremony, was talking about how the harmony of individual voices coming together and how they only last for a breath.
Right.
And that was the only thing that had value in any of this. And this whole departure from Washington was just like a blip on the radar, and then right back to work. And it was almost like, okay, but this work has no value for you. I mean, the stuff that you really valued is back here, and you're, okay, never mind. He's not cares anymore.
You know, what's funny? It's funny that you guys, and that's a great perspective you guys are looking at, as far as, because he did mention those things about 50 years from now.
Yeah.
Is this going to be important? And then he looked at harmony, and it's kind of like looking at things as they are in the moment.
Yeah.
And he said it lasts for the moment of a breath, and mm-hmm. that's pretty much the breath is kind of like, breath represents life, and your life is kind of like that breath. Right. So living in harmony at that time period. But for me, I looked at it like the thing that he really feel like he really accomplished anything to deserve that. And then that actually makes you, you know, look at things, and I feel like he was looking at everything that was of anything of grandeur.
Yeah.
Like, did anybody really deserve to receive the accolades?
He even called the library a sham.
Right. So, but that makes him, his perspective, I think that affected his perspective on everything that he holds near and dear about the things that people have accomplished. And even in his arena, based on it being political, was it really based on them doing any good? Or was it based on just, I made a phone call, and that's really, it was nothing to him.
But I think the parallel for me was when his buddy was saying, you know why I whitewater raft? Because when you're out there rafting and you're in there, you're in the now.
Right.
You're not thinking about the past. When he goes back with Stamper at that last moment, says, okay, we got this, he's in the whitewater raft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he's not thinking about anything. He's just in that moment. Right. That's where he lives.
But I think he doesn't care about the library because it's not permanent. 50 years from now, it's going to change, and he wants something permanent that's going to carry his name, you know, throughout history.
That's true.
But I don't know that he even – I think he doesn't like the – care about the library because it was a sham to begin with. How he got it was just he asked favor from somebody else, put the money. He didn't really do anything for it. And I also think that he realizes none of this is permanent. I don't know that he thinks that any of it has any permanence. That's the thing.
I believe he does believe that there is some permanence in certain things that go down in record books, like Garrett Walker. What's his last name?
The president.
The president.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Is that his name?
Yes.
President Walker.
Yes.
Right. So he will forever be in the record books.
Yeah.
That's something that's of permanence. Mm-hmm. I think he's looking for something that's more solid and something that is going to be something that's concretely there. 50 years from
something
now.
Something that the cadets might recognize.
Exactly.
Rather than not knowing who the hell he was right in the food line.
Right, in the food line, like, who's this guy? I don't know. I think he's dead.
But I think that's part of the reason why maybe he hasn't had any kids is because even though, yes, they carry your name, they're really not permanent because if they don't do anything with the name, the legacy to keep it, they're gonna be dead one day too. So he wants to build something that is going to be forever remembered, or it's going to be written in history books.
Right. Now, I just got to ask this at the panel, because I get it. People, they want the permanence. He wants his name, the legacy. I just go, what? I don't have that in my life. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me if anybody. I don't need that. I'm just wondering, does everybody have that, or am I the only weird one that doesn't have a need for legacy and permanence?
I can't say I think everybody. But for me, I would like to have left something that you think that is something with your name on it. And it was funny that we're having this conversation. I was talking to my mom. Hi, Mom.
Okay.
On the way here, and we're talking, we kind of got into a conversation, like, indirectly about that. And I was like, look, if one day you have kids, those kids are going to live their life for them.
Right.
And whatever they do is going to have their name on it. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, his dad was Thaddeus. Okay. So everybody, to a certain degree, is living for them in that immediate, like, them and their spouse or them and their, you know, because that is that period of that is what your legacy is going to be. Do you want to be such and such a son, or do you want somebody else to be known as your such and such? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I never understood it.
But everybody has a different. Some people want to accomplish and leave for their family and for their. But at the end of the day, it's like, well, when you're gone from here, you're not thinking about what's here. At least I don't
think.
That's something.
You're dead. Why do you care that your name's on a building? You're dead.
Right. Exactly.
That's why he doesn't care. That's why.
But you're saying he wants permanence in some fashion. What I'm saying is, you're going to be dead. What do you care what
But the whole point he makes is that in 50 years, that building may not be well, if someone else's name will be on the building, mm-hmm. not his. So that's not permanent. Whereas, you know, if he is the next president and right. it's written in history books, that's never going to change.
But even still, when I question it, and I know this is, maybe I should just defer, because who cares? You're dead. Who cares that you're
well,
you're going to be dead?
No. I think I understand John's question, and it's something that I go back and forth with. And I think that part of it is, even though death is one of the only things that is guaranteed, we specifically as Americans, because I know that the viewers come from
all over the world.
Yeah. So correct. People have different viewpoints on death. But arguably, as Americans, we don't like death. Right?
Right.
We very much kind of like living in the moment. We arguably don't like planning ahead for that inevitable.
Right.
And I think that to a certain extent, your legacy or leaving something behind is trying to extend that. Yeah. Your lifespan. So right. even though I agree with you, you're dead, so who cares? So we shouldn't be so concerned with, I mean, even arguably the amount of money we spend on funerals and so forth and so on and those types of things. I think it's another way of trying to ward off death. The more important you are in life, the grander you are, it's perceived that when you do die, you'll have no regrets.
Well, here's the thing. A legacy also is directly assimilated with immortality.
Right.
So the longer you live is more of like a power thing between men, because, you know, with men is power struggle, control, and part of that power struggle and control has to do with longevity. And the longevity, you know, it's kind of like people who talk about people who are making movies. Mm-hmm. And, so, you know, people that are broke, who don't have a lot of money, they're like, I don't care. These guys making $20 million a movie. Why does he care if his movie tanked? It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're in a circle of people who are all making $20 million a movie, that person wants their movie to not be the crappy movie. They want to be the $20 million guy who has the number one movie in the box office, because they're competing amongst guys that are talking about legacy that have nothing to do with money, because we're all making money.
Yeah. And I think
so. It's all relative.
Completely.
It basically was my point.
And it's funny, because that actually is a great segue to his conversation with his friends, in the same point that he obviously was the dominant one of the friends. Like he's obviously the conductor. Like even in terms of their what choir? What is the word?
Quartet.
The quartet. Thank you.
John Ashcroft and Trent Lott, and they're singing. I don't know if anybody knows those, but he's there singing. Familiar. Yeah, absolutely. There was a quartet. Quartet. Or whatever.
Yeah.
So they used to sing. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, so and it's just even the same point that as he's revealing that it all is a sham and he basically just wheeled and dealed, his friend was like, no, because I knew from the minute you cussed out that drill sergeant that you were going to be the one with the name.
On the blimber.
And he's basically saying, like, but they still asked you and you knew how to get it done.
Right.
So I think that in revealing, I think that Frank is starting to realize, like, okay, is this all I am, is wheeling and dealing? And I think it's important, even at the beginning of the episode when they mentioned Jefferson and some other people, and then they had to obviously throw a little dirt on them. Even though I agree with you, Emma, that there's a permanence to being president, arguably history is only as relevant as what's written right now.
Right.
Does that make sense? So someone can write something and 50 years later we can find out new information or a new perspective, and that same legacy isn't the same. So I think that's even why Frank is having this thought, where he's like, what is all this? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, to me, the beginning scene with the reference to Thomas Jefferson would have just been a throwaway.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I think it also gives an attribute to hope and dreaming. And a lot of people think once you get older and once you start, you're like middle aged or whatever, that you stop hoping and dreaming. And I honestly don't believe that. I believe that you can always hope and dream. And as long as you still have breath in your lungs, then you still can learn and still can accomplish. And I believe that still takes place within people, especially if you're in a position of servitude, which is theoretically what people in Congress
are representatives. So
supposed
should be
to be
in service.
There's supposed to be positions of service, and it's supposed to invoke positive change. And positive change is influencing society and influencing for the betterment of our existence and quality of life. So if they get that attributed to them, kind of like how Frank got, you know, credit for heading up the education bill, and that is, like, there's hope in the betterment and quality of life of our existence. We're progressing, kind of like technology. And of course, technology is progressing faster than we are, but that is kind of I think that had a lot to do with the episode as well. There was like an undertone to the episode is like, look, there's always hope. There's still, as long as you are here, you can invoke change and you can invoke positive, you know, beingness. That's what I kind of took from that as well. He kind of like looked at what he accomplished and he is like, look, well, things are not always cracked up to always what they're cracked up to be, but as long as there's a certain element that believes and perceives these things to be that way, that can be the very spark that brings about the person or the entity that makes the change happen. Because perception can be argued as being reality to a certain degree, even if it's not reality. So we can have that debate probably for another 10 episodes. Anyway, let's talk about Claire talking about them not having kids. Mm-hmm. She goes back to her room and calls Adam.
Actually, right. Can we back up and talk about Remy?
Sure. Please, what would you like to say, Sophia?
You know what? Let's talk about Remy.
Sorry.
And I kind of wanted to talk about that. We're talking about the kid situation.
Go ahead. I apologize.
That's a whole juicy subject
by
itself.
But it does lead into the Adam thing, so go ahead.
Yeah.
Fire away.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, obviously, as we mentioned, Sam Cor was brought back into the scenario. Mm-hmm. And as always, we see Claire by herself, right?
Right.
And I think this is also ties back to Frank in the same point that when Remy basically says, oh, hey, like, I didn't know that you guys were staying here. Right. And she looks at him like, well, yeah, of course you do, because we always stay here. Yeah. And the last time we were here and you were here in Charleston, this is where we stayed.
Right.
And he, you know, playfully goes, oh, you know, totally a coincidence. My assistant set it up.
Right.
I think I literally was like, woo! Like, I knew that there was something going on from before when they were at the CWP, and then nothing happened. However, there was a hubris to him that the way she handled it, like, she was like, oh, you know, sit down, have a drink. You know, he made sure Frank wasn't around, and then basically said, oh, well, they gave me the bridal suite.
Uh-huh.
Not a coincidence that she was wearing white. In a sea of all... John mentioned it when we were watching. In a sea of all black and navy blue, she was the only one wearing white, number one. Number two, Frank even specifically made a reference to Remy, basically that she's warding off her admirers.
Right.
Professor Higgins basically said, I want to get you drunk to take your wife.
Right.
Right, yes. Again, because she's the prize.
Right.
Like, she's the pedestal.
Right.
Remember what happened when there was pedestals?
Yes.
And then, you know, he basically is like, oh, you know, I have the bridal suite. I have champagne on ice. And she basically was like, you have gotten very confident since working for Frank.
But I like how he handled himself.
Thank you. Well, proceed, Thaddeus.
I've always been confident, Claire. It was just a matter of... I can't remember what he
goes,
said.
He goes, I didn't have the bridal suite before.
Right. They were at the Best Western four blocks away.
Right. No,
yeah,
and,
exactly.
And also
Which
he said the staff.
Right.
And he said the staff.
Yeah, you always stayed here, but we had to stay there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And go ahead, Emma.
No, I was going to say, I think he was very bold in doing that. But it might be because he's seen how Frank... you know, does his work. He's been behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. He's seen all the women he's probably slept with. So he sees how, kind of in a way, their relationship is a business transaction. Not 100%, but he's trying to take some percentage out of it. So
yeah, but I can't see how that's going to...
Okay, so this is my question.
Go ahead.
Was Remy trying to get some from Claire?
Completely.
Yes.
But the reason is why.
There's no hesitation there.
Oh, sorry. But the reason is why. I think when I initially watched it, I literally was like, no, because from before I had thought that I'd seen something from Claire to him.
Exactly.
In the same point that remember when the first time that he met Jillian, right? The way that Claire looked at Remy was like in a very adoring, admiring fashion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, especially with the way that they keep setting up Claire, I think it's a power play. Meaning at the end of the day, he keeps butting heads with Frank, right? So how do you really get to a dude? You want what he has.
Right.
Not necessarily that I think that he wants Claire.
Right.
In the same way, even with a security guard. I don't think that they want her. And that's why she keeps saying, like, you guys are putting me on a pedestal. You don't really see me.
Mm-hmm.
They want what Frank has. Because then they're taking his position. It's, again, chess, right?
Right.
You take someone's queen, what happens?
Yeah, game over.
Right.
Well,
right.
Almost. But
right.
Soon.
Kind
of
soon. That's really... So, but it's not that you want the queen because you actually are theoretically attracted to her.
Right.
You're attracted to power. So in order to potentially get power and to become the king, you have to take the queen.
Right.
I think that's what it is.
Helen of Troy kind of thing?
Completely, because I think it was more, it was more hubris, and I didn't sense attraction from him to her. I felt more power. He was making a power play, and even in saying he has a bridal suite, he upgraded from Best Western to the bridal
four
suite,
blocks away.
Meaning he has a better suite than she does.
Right.
So basically, again.
Well, he actually is in bed with the organization that provided the money for him, for anybody to even be there. So that is swag enough by itself for him to walk in and say, "What's up, Claire? I got the bridal suite if you want to come up." And I'm not suggesting anything more than a drink. So I was like,
for me,
yes, Thaddeus, go ahead, please.
Me, I'm not going to say he could have just been being polite. You know, I got the bridal suite. Come enjoy it. I know you're not in as good a room as I'm in.
Okay.
He could have just been swagging on her, like I'm in a position to be the man, and that doesn't mean he was trying to get at her or get with her or hook up. He could have just been showing off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Like, respect me.
Okay.
Like, kind of thing, as opposed to, I'm not suggesting anything more, like, don't flatter yourself kind of thing. Just, you know, if you want to come up and have a drink, you can. I'm the man around here.
Great point.
You know what I'm saying? So that's why I was like, the way he played it was...
She certainly jumped right to him.
It could have been read either way.
And I think that's the telling point.
Yeah, that she went right to him hitting on her. And when he first just... I was like, what? But when she made that jump, I went, wow. I didn't see that just yet. But she was reading a different tale than I was.
And I think that's why she called Adam to make herself feel good. Because she did realize that at the end, maybe he wasn't really into her. And she jumped to the conclusion.
Exactly.
So she calls Adam to... So he could sweet talk her.
To salve her.
And so make her feel like someone does want her.
Just last episode, we were talking about how, you know, she's lost her bloom and, you know, all that other stuff happening. And maybe she did misread that, and that would make her feel even worse. Oh my God, he's not it. No, no, man.
Exactly. And that's what I'm saying. That's why she called Adam.
Yeah.
And that made her feel better about it.
He does.
Because was he hitting on me or was he not hitting on me? Because after I said no, blah, 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 after she rejected him,
mm-hmm.
Then he was like, "I'm just being polite, Claire."
Like Thaddeus, really? You look like you act like you've said this many times.
I'm not gonna dignify that with a response. Anyway, I
don't know.
It could have been really
interesting. I could go either way.
I think she felt like an idiot going back to her room, but to be unsure.
Yeah.
Because she's not in the game anymore. She's not in the dating game. Mm-hmm. Like, Remy is a young guy who's got amount of power himself and is in a very, very high status position.
I agree. I liked your argument, to take the queen. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just to take the queen and everything. Because I get that. But then I thought it would be such a stupid move to try to make a play for her. Because that's only going to make things worse between you and Frank.
Exactly. So that's what I'm thinking. Like, that obviously she probably went back to her room and had to think about okay. And then just like Frank said, what was that, two episodes ago, that friends make the worst enemies.
Yeah.
And he was referring to Remy. Remy knows me too well. So it's just kind of like the student who becomes greater than the teacher, because they learned everything that the teacher knew at a younger age.
And
they just kind of exponentiate the
point is made.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that anyone clearly understands how truthful Claire and Frank are with one another. Mm-hmm. So I think that Remy, especially because that's why I think Remy deliberately went to Claire for the donation. Like, he really thought he was going to be able to angle her. Right?
Okay, here's the thing that I want to say to that.
Okay.
Okay. Remy is actually in a position to help Claire. He was in a position to help Claire. He actually helped Frank. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he used to work for Frank... It goes right back to your whole explanation of old guard, new guard. Okay, so now you've got this old guard, new guard, and this guy who used to actually work for Frank is in a position to help him and his wife. And remember the position that she's in psychologically and emotionally based on all the things that have been going on. Now this guy just helps funnel the donation for her husband, who he used to work for. It kind of reminds me of Puffy and Andre Harrell. It's kind of like that type of situation. How Puffy used to work for Andre Harrell.
Yeah,
and
I
now Puffy is the
analogy.
Man.
No,
I
that's,
think
that's,
it's, that's to me is how I look
no,
at it.
No, it's a great analogy, especially given the fact that before, obviously, Frank respects Remy. And the only thing that he didn't respect was his perception of power, right? Because he was saying that Remy wants, like, the McMansion, and I want the library. But Frank, in his episode, has just said how fleeting the library is.
Right.
So, arguably, is it that the new guard has more power than the old guard?
That's always the struggle.
That is
right? the struggle.
That is always the struggle. But the Remy's existence is playing upon Claire's insecurities, and this is going to be something that's really telling. And because he knows them, he's just acquaintance with them.
Yeah,
he knows them, and is, you know, you really can't say it's rare that it happens that somebody who used to work for somebody or was a student becomes in a better position than the teacher or whoever, because it happens quite a bit. But with this situation in particular, she's usually, her and Frank are usually in a position of dictating. Mm-hmm. And in this situation, someone that they're used to dictating to, they're no longer doing that with.
And I think that's why he gets under her skin, because she can't, you know, before he was helping Frank, so she would have been able to put him in his place and been able to have Frank done something about it, but now she can't do anything.
Well, he would have never done anything like that before.
She's used to seeing him in that sense, and now it's different because he's equal. They're on the same level. He's not below her, so she's probably not used to...
Are they equal?
I don't think they're equal.
I think Remy is a little step up.
I completely agree.
I think Remy's a step up, and it was very telling of she saying, wow, you're confident. He's like, I've always been confident.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of time for him to gain the position that he felt he was deserving of or where he wanted to be. Now,
and I think that's especially why earlier on in the conversation when Remy brings up Russo, and basically Frank was like, oh, basically, like, do you not have other clients you need to be worried about? And he was like, not that funded your library. And he could have kept going, and your campaign, and your whole life, and your whole lifestyle. But I think that the question is I'm seeing a foreshadowing, right? Frank chooses people, right? That he can, we've called him Bobby Fischer, we've called him a puppet master, and now we're back to military, right? We're literally at the Citadel. He went to a military...
Sentinel.
Okay. What did I say? The Citadel?
You said Citadel.
Oh, sorry.
I just know that we're going to get letters.
No, that's
so
true. Thank you. He went to a military college, right? Mm-hmm. So again, he's choosing people who...
That was my phone dying. Oh, sorry. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
This is really the question. Is he choosing soldiers or is he choosing commanders? Mm. Right?
Well, Peter's definitely a soldier.
And again, I think that he keeps misjudging people. Mm. Like, again, and I know it's not relevant this episode, but Linda, that's going to blow up. Zoe has to blow up. Remy has to blow up. Russo has to blow up.
Well, okay, as far as Remy's concerned, I think he's... Well, I don't want to say he misjudged Remy, because Remy, it seems as if whenever he speaks of Remy or whatever he thought of Remy when Remy worked for him, he already had high regard for Remy in the position that he was, while he was his press secretary or whatever. But when it comes to Zoe is, that's a new situation. That may blow up. I think whatever happened with Remy kind of blew up already. That's why Remy is where he's at. Okay, so that's already taken place. The Linda situation's already blown up, because Linda is part of the whole not getting elected or getting appointed
secretary.
To Secretary of State. So that's already happened.
That's
so the things that would potentially be the blow ups, I think, would be Zoe and Russo. Primarily. And who knows what's going to happen with this Claire and Adam situation, but I think she's going to... I don't know.
But I think, though, Emma's point was, I think, spot on, and the same point that it was her insecurity, so she reached back out to Adam, the person that she knows cares for her. But I think that bringing it back, and I don't know if this is one we want to talk about it or not, but again, I think that it goes back to, we possibly got some answers onto why they seem so cold regarding one another.
Right.
This was the first time we saw Frank, in what we consider to be like a traditional standpoint, show affection and or love towards another person with his best friend, the Rifleman, and whose name I can't recall. Is it Phil? I'm assuming it was Phil just because it was like the first name that was on the wall
now,
in the library.
Now, was that his best friend?
Well, I mean, this is where we're going to go. I mean, we're going to go there, right?
I definitely
think it was his best friend. It's just regardless, I think the question is whether or not there was something beyond that.
I think there were definitely lovers.
Yeah. And, you know, the Rifleman, he blew it off. He said, oh, yeah, you know, he messed around a couple times, but it's like, whatever. Now, Frank is obviously looking for something more emotionally secure than what he's at. That showed me that maybe Frank's not completely secure being or comfortable being the
uncaring.
He's not. It seems like he's not the emotional man in the relationship, so to speak, with Claire. It's kind of like,
marriage of political convenience.
Right. They just kind of work together.
Mm-hmm. I just got the sense that he hasn't fully let go of what he used to have.
Well, yeah, he wants to recapture it. I mean, he had a huge impact on him. Go ahead.
Did you realize how when he was leaving, he got the coffees and one of his other friends gave him the business card to reconnect, and he looked at him like, aren't you going to give me your number? You know,
are we going to keep it? Oh, it's
really?
So funny. I mean, I read it that way, but not for that reason, but go ahead.
Well, because he still wants to have an attachment, and Frank was truly himself in this episode. But what I did also realize is, and I can't remember his name, but he asks him, is it going to be Frank or Francis on the library?
Frank goes on a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Francis goes on the
library. But it seems like he calls him Frank, and it's a little bit more intimate, whereas Claire calls him Francis. So it's more formal.
Yeah, and he specifically says that. He goes, does anyone even call Francis. You Francis? And she goes, Claire does.
He goes, Claire does. And then
again in the library, he goes, do you have anyone? And he goes, Claire. And he goes, other than Claire.
Right.
And I think it's really
telling.
From
time to time.
Right. And but even that, but that's when he goes back to
Zoe.
But that's when he goes back to the Frank that we know.
Yeah.
Right. He was grimy. Right.
Okay, but
versus his earlier comment, and we're just going to call him his best friend.
Right.
He was like, I was so drawn to you. Mm-hmm. Like, even the way that he spoke was so much more endearing than we have ever heard Frank speak to another person. And then the fact that he gets sick. Like, to be that vulnerable, I don't know if anyone, like, most people who are in that type of a position of power would never allow themselves to get so drunk that someone would need to take care of them.
Right.
That right there for powerful people, type A machismo personalities, is in of itself a sign of intimacy because it means that you're going to let your guard down enough to say that you're weak.
I thought he actually purposely did that to stay the night with him.
Interesting.
I agree too.
Ooh,
yeah.
And I also kind of like...
He was trying to see if something would maybe happen.
That is the only thing I disagree with. That's funny.
He was trying to see if something... I mean, he was hanging out. He was trying to recapture those old years. That's what it seemed like
I agree, but not... But for me, this is going to sound weird. I actually felt like it was more intimate and more of a connection that they didn't. Because for Frank...
Then it wasn't about the physicality?
Exactly. Because for Frank, that's power. Mm-hmm. What he was doing, that was connection. Right. And that's what he's talking about, even in terms of harmony of voices.
Yeah, that whole thing was that for me, it was trying to recapture what that moment that they had together and that person that he could have been had he stayed there. It's interesting because I was the whole time I'm going, geez, if you had stayed with that truth, whatever that was for you and that lover, partner, friend, whatever.
Homie, lover, friend.
There you go. If you stayed in that truth and kept on that path, what kind of a different person would he be?
Mm-hmm.
What else would he have accomplished? And what kind of permanence would he have in his life? As opposed to, no, I went this path, which doesn't include that.
Right. And it seems as if his buddy wasn't really trying to allow him to reconnect beyond what was happening there.
Because also, too, like, this is going to sound so corny, but, like, you can't go home again.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't look back. Right. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, at the end of the day, in a real-world situation, what are we going to do now?
Right.
Does it make sense? Like, let's be real. So, obviously, this guy's married. He has kids that are older than they were when they started at the school. Frank is now a congressman, and he's married. Mm-hmm. So he almost was saying, like, in a way, like, dude, like, let's get real. However, I think after the speech, that was a necessary closure that they needed. And that's why he said, I'm so happy not only that I was here, and it was a beautiful ceremony, but I'm so happy that I was here to hear what you had to say.
Right.
Because I think that's what Frank also needed. Frank needed to know that he meant something to someone.
Yeah, because the whole thing about it, he wanted something to matter.
But I like how he ends the ceremony when he says, and I like to thank the love of my life. He makes an emphasis on that by mentioning Claire's name. I think sends a message to him that, okay, what we had, I just wrapped up and we're done. I'm moving on.
I agree. And I think that's even why he saluted him. Like, he kind of goes, oh, you can come to Arkansas River, blah, blah, anytime.
Very not affectionate at all.
Right. No, exactly. And it was kind of like, I salute you, like, bye, go.
As a cadet, what they used to do years ago, which means it's in the past. Because why would you shake somebody's hand or give them a hug or something? Mm-hmm. But no, we did this. This is how I remember you. This is when we were together. That kind of thing. It's something.
Yeah. That was really weird for me.
It was a little odd.
The love of my life, Claire thing was really... It was really weird for me.
You didn't think it was true or what?
It's not that it wasn't true. Just for me, it felt more like... It's like saying, I'm the love of my life. To me, Claire is just a woman, female version of him.
But that's why he loves her.
No, I know.
Narcissist.
Yeah. So, but is he really sharing his life with her? Or is he really just have someone that is like a counterpart of himself? That's just him being him. That allows just... him to delve into the darkest parts of who he is, because that's really what Claire allows him to do. I mean, he's sleeping with Zoe and she knows about it. What did we get out of this? What is she offering us? That's the darkest part. There's no intimacy in that. There was no her being mad like a normal wife would, that she's sleeping with, you know, that he's sleeping with another woman.
But this is where I'm going to bring it, though.
There's an agenda.
This is going to be very unpopular.
Okay. Uh-oh.
Men and women, right, who are married or in committed relationships, have the significant other cheat all the time. They go ape, they scream, they holler, they throw things, blah, 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 and they stay with them.
Yes.
Right? So somehow we think that is more normal, right, than the people know. And we've possibly had friends who have been in these situations and they're, I can't believe he did this or she did this. And you know, you're like, oh, but they're not going to break up. Mm-hmm. Is that better? All the hooting and hollering rather than I know that at the end of the day, our marriage, what it's based on, and him sleeping with some little girl isn't going to ruin what we've built.
Well, here's the thing.
Now, I'm not a fan of that. You're just going to go. There's no yelling. There's no screaming. You're gone. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, well, the yelling and screaming is tied to, you know, emotion. And love is supposed to be connected. It's supposed to be assimilated to being an emotional trait. It's, you know, some people say, well, love is an action. Wow. You got to show that you love. But, you know, it's a feeling as well. And that kind of feeling of somebody going out on you can feel like what are you doing? That's a threat to the love, which makes that person respond that way. It's a betrayal. It's a threat. It's a threat to the existence of what they have. So... she's so confident that, okay, well, if it's all business to her, is that relationship just all business to her?
Because she gets insecure. We talked to her, she can't be that confident if she's insecure as well. We've talked about both, so I'm sure that, I mean...
Go ahead, Emma.
We've also talked about them being transparent. How transparent is he with her? Because I honestly don't think she knows about
his... Oh, I totally disagree!
How transparent are they with each other?
I don't think they know the details.
Oh, no. Real quick. She totally knows. She totally knows because when Remy goes, where's Frank? She goes, he's off cavorting with his friends. This show is extremely intelligently written. My brain was like cavorting. I had to look it up. Yes. I know what the word means. Mm-hmm. Two meanings, right? The first one is jump or dance around excitedly, right? The second meaning is apply oneself to sexual pursuits. Claire picks her words on purpose.
Right.
She goes, he's off cavorting with his friend.
So she can be like,
he's off drinking, he's off having fun. Of all words, and my brain knew. I was like, oh, there's a connotative definition. And even at the ceremony, when he looks at him, she sees him look at him in a way that she knows what that look is.
Right.
I think they're that. Even at
come
the end,
here, look.
And even at the end, when she goes, "Take your time," that's her way of saying, "I'm going to give you your space and your time to put the past in the past before we get back to what we have,
or to relive this moment and have fun for the couple of days or whatever."
It was a nice detour, a diversion. Yeah.
So. We don't have a whole lot of time left, so I definitely want to talk about Peter Russo, and we should talk about Peter Russo because he had a little time going.
He went back home too.
He went home. He went to go visit his mother. which was like probably the worst home visit I've ever seen someone go see their mom. I was like, I felt so bad for this guy. I'm like, wow, really? She doesn't like the lights going off and on in her room. He's out for the change. She's like, leave it alone. Mm-hmm. I got two kids. You want to see the kids? Leave me. Get the phone away from me. Those things called brain cancer. She's like, let me see our grandkids.
But she's watching TV.
But she's watching Wendy Williams.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, now I understand why he's been drinking. Yeah. Or he started drinking at the age of 9.
That says a lot about his whole backstory, the, you know, just how his, you know, he's with his mother or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes to see his friend Paul. So
apologizes.
They go to a bar. Doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. You know, basically Paul tells him to F off in so many words. And
I think that was it. That's the subtext. I think
pretty much. And you know, Christina shows up. She's there to support him through this. And you know, even from she was there for him personally,
right? But even after she he told her not to come,
right? But she also felt that it was important that he need that support, more even support. From a gubernatorial standpoint. We're running for office. He needs to start. It's bare bones right now.
Sure,
it's kind of like a grassroots campaign. So he has to get that community behind him in order to move forward.
I like that he said it was. It's not going to be pretty. No, I know these people. And I thought that scene with everybody, that was a good scene for me because I just liked that everybody's just right at him.
But
right.
I think, and the reason they were listening to him is because they were in their comfort zone. They were in a bar. You know, they were probably somewhere that they hang out. And
the second time? I was talking about the first time.
First time there was like the auditorium.
Yeah, exactly. Meeting.
But the second time he says, you know, it's the harsh truth. I'm all you guys have left.
I actually think yes, I agree with you that the bar setting, the second conversation was different because it's somewhere that they feel comfortable. But I think it shows that he was coming to them like the old Peter Russo.
Yeah, I mean, met them where they were.
Completely. Because the first conversation, he had some audacity. Like, here you literally have taken the food and roofs away from people, and now they're going to be destitute, and you're potentially offering them $6 an hour, which is...
to be trained while they get a part-time job, and they can help supplement their income.
Right? And even all the terms, and I think that the lady said, she was like, you're in Washington making these things that look good on paper. We can't eat paper. We can't put paper over, you know, paper over our homes. It's not a roof. And I think that the way that they walked out showed kind of where he's from and how far removed
even the optics again, he's removed, he's on the stage, he's apart from them, he's wearing a suit, he doesn't look anything like when we see him in the bar. He's obviously come to his senses and got the rolled up sleeves, he's sitting standing right in front of him, using their language.
He has to remember who voted for him, who got him in office, and what's going to get him in office where his roots are. I mean, he's in a very, very tough position to be able to ask some people for a favor to vote for him to make him governor, and he's just cost them 12,000 jobs, and now he's saying that he won't be able to help them get all of them get their jobs back for a number of years to come. Like, it's going to be in phases. It's going to be like a few hundred here, two more years, we'll maybe have 1,000, a few couple thousand. Yeah. It's like, what? Like, dude, if I was one of those people, I'd be like, dude, get out of here. But hopefully he has his plan.
But he's right.
Somewhat works.
No one else gives a crap about it.
Right. And
so where are you going to go?
Okay, well, it is what it is now. Exactly. So what do you want to do?
Yeah. And I think it was important, though, because I think also, too, the scene for me, one of my favorite scenes was the scene with Paul when he was, like, basically waiting for Paul when Paul and his family came home.
Yeah, that was good.
Because he needed to actually apologize. That other apology was BS.
Right.
Because especially when Paul says, like, if we were back home, I'd hit you.
Right.
The reason he didn't hit him, because he was saying, you're not even worth it.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like, because I'm not going to say real friends, but real friends thug it out. Like, you fight. Like, you, there is no, but it's true. Like, it doesn't mean you physically fight. But, like, you don't harbor resentment. Like, you go to the core of the issue, however dirty it needs to get, you get, and then you deal with it, you say your piece, and you're over and you're done, and you move on and be friends.
Right.
They didn't do that. That's basically what he was doing.
Right.
He was like, I'm willing to fight you. I don't want to, but I will. And even when, basically, Paul got the upper hand, which he let him have, the way that he put his hands up as submission, he basically was saying, like, yo, dude, if you need to beat my ass to feel better. No, but seriously,
I'll let you do it
because that's how connected I am to this, because at least then I'm the guy that you said I am, that when my back gets pushed against the wall, I'm gonna throw a punch. And I feel like that's why when he walked in the bar, he walked in a different man.
Yeah. Right.
And he talked to them like, you and I both know the shipping yard was going to be closed anyways. Right. So yeah, I may not have fought for it now. I'm going to be straight up with you.
He was finally being authentic with him.
Completely. Right. And I think that just backing up a little bit, even the way that the kids came down the stairs and they were looking at them fighting, they didn't scream, don't hurt my daddy! Which shows, again,
they're used to.
Does it make sense? So again, and it, going back to VP saying, oh, well, they're urban. Well, that like, I'm not sure how that's going to work because they're urban.
It goes back to the mom. The mom saying, oh, did you win the fight?
Right. Exactly.
Did you win the fight? That's my boy.
Right. Exactly.
No, I think that's a perfect and Nazi.
Philly.
Right. No.
Well, in L.A., when you got lost a fight, you got your butt beat at home by your parents for losing the fight. Yeah. You got home. It's like, did you win? No. Okay. Then bend over. You're really going to get whipped now.
Yeah. And I think it showed, but I cannot wait to see how this plays itself out, because all I keep thinking, and I don't mean to make a prediction early, is but so what happens if he actually mobilizes? They get the watershed bill, all the stuff like that, and Frank decides he doesn't want him to be governor.
Okay, so let's go into predictions, since we've discussed pretty much everything that's happened this episode for the most part.
And now, you're after Buzz TV predictions.
Okay, so no real news and gossip besides this show is one of the hottest shows that's ever been aired on television. It's doing great. It's not even on television. It's on the net, but it's a great show.
That means it's everywhere.
It means it's everywhere. And you guys, even in New Zealand, can watch it. So, predictions for Chapter 9.
I'm waiting for you.
You're waiting for
me? You lead the way.
Sophia Stanley, go.
I got a lot of them. It's bad. I definitely feel... No, I do. I got a lot of them. I feel like something's going to come to a head with Russo and Frank, because Frank kept saying previously he'll make a great candidate, but not a great governor, right? So I'm a little bit confused with that. But then obviously towards the end of the episode, he basically is like, no, we're going to get a speech ready. We're going to do this. It's moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he wants Pennsylvania for some reason.
But
to help with the presidency next time.
But that whole line is completely going to butt heads with Sancor. So either he's going to have to come to a head with Russo or Sancor, because Remy specifically said, what, 3/4 of Pennsylvania is on the Marcella Shale or something, which I had to look up. It basically is like, you know, the minerals that you basically can drill for. Mm-hmm. And he said that the watershed bill is going to reduce drilling.
Right.
So you can't have both.
So that's going to be a problem.
It's going to be a problem. Yeah.
They're
going to
run somebody against him.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I think that Janine's going to be a problem. Janine's not just going to basically write some little puff piece. No. That's all I got.
He's gonna have his troubles.
Okay, John?
I got nothing good, and I already made my prediction at the beginning of this season. I wouldn't make any predictions because no one's gonna believe me anyway, because they're gonna think we just watched ahead.
Okay, Emma Costandian.
I think Remy's gonna come back, and I think Claire has to work with him and in a way yield to him. So I think Claire and Remy being put in that situation means something. There is something that's coming that is going to affect Frank.
But do you think that Claire and Remy are going to get together? Are you going to go that far?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so.
My prediction is that the VP, something's going to happen with the VP.
Yeah, we barely even talked about it last episode. Him sneaking in, getting his damn pen.
Right. Oh my goodness!
Yes. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And I didn't get my pen.
Linda was like,
"How petty!"
I'll work on that for you. Okay.
They hate him too, because they want to get rid of him.
Yes, they do.
They do.
Next time, after Buzzers, where can we find you guys?
I'm here just building the damn studio. I'm sorry, the great third studio. Sorry, in the middle of it, it's a damn studio, but when it's done, it'll be terrific.
So we can bring you more shows. You can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley.
You can find me on Instagram at Emma_3xK, and Twitter, I am Emma K.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus, CLUBTHADDEUS. Instagram is also known as IG, for you guys who didn't know that. Until next time, after Buzzers.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.